Okay, thanks, Jerry, and good morning, everybody. What I'd first like to do is acknowledge the other individuals that you see as co-authors here. Jerry, you've met, who was really integral, as you could see, as far as pulling together some of the U.S., particularly in his area of the world of the U.S., and the other two Americans up there, Sanford Eigenbrot and Bill Pan. So they were part of a similar initiative of a smaller scale that was starting to gain some momentum in the Pacific Northwest. And it was actually John Kirkgaard out of Australia that put me on to them as the wheat initiative was starting to blossom. So were their efforts, and of course Australia has always been interested in that as well. And so together we've sort of pulled together what we would call an expert working group for agronomy. And so I'm just going to give you some background about that before we get into some of these other more detailed talks. So why do we have a wheat initiative? And some background information around that, statistics. The big story is, obviously, is that will wheat production be able to keep up with demand? And always knowing that the amount of acres available, whether you're talking Canada and the prairies or Australia or Europe, the demand for those acres is, and the risk of those acres being displaced by other crops is very high. And so it's a challenge for agronomists to maintain that by teaming up with geneticists and breeders to exploit the latest genetics in order to keep that momentum. However, as you look at this, there's a really good chance that demand might outpace it. And what happens when you have that issue, like we had, I believe, in 2011 or leading up to 2011, is an issue where you have food scarcity, a risk, and there's a real nice correlation. Whenever you have food risk, food scarcity, you have global instability. And so that is why you saw G20 ministers of ag come together to try and address this issue and create more stability. And in their mind, the vision was a vibrant global wheat public-private research community to improve wheatland productivity, quality, and sustainable production, and so on. And so really what that meant was, what would that look like? And so the real guiding principle around this has been the development of a strategic research agenda that was developed by the Wheat Initiative. So the framework, and what does that look like? Basically, there's three bodies that make up the governance of the Wheat Initiative. This is right from the Wheat Initiative website. I believe it's wheatinitiative.org. I'm not sure if those bubbles mean the sphere of influence that each board has or not, but if you take a look at the Institution Coordination Committee, that would be a big bubble, because those are all the people that are holding the carrot. They're the ones that have represented countries or regions or nonprofit organizations or private sector companies that have put money up to keep this initiative going. And then the other two, the Research Committee and the Scientific Board, will look at and try and get alignment of research projects. It's not going to be any sort of funding body, but it's going to be a body that facilitates research and tries to bring together global wheat researchers. And one real important role that I see evolving from the Wheat Initiative, and it's already begun, is that I think more and more you'll see big programs involving a number of countries perhaps trying to go after funding programs that are related to, not related to any sort of government. So perhaps Gates Foundation, for example. I sit as a member on the research committee, and there was a program that came forward that really was looking to the Wheat Initiative to endorse their proposal, which I believe was at least implicitly implied by the Gates Foundation that they wanted some kind of endorsement. And so that's going to be sort of a very important role, I think, is it's going to be seen by members or people holding funding envelopes to sort of give credibility to the program or the proposal that you're bringing forward. And all that endorsement will relate to the alignment of those proposals to that strategic research agenda. And so in order to execute that strategic research agenda, these expert working groups were developed that you see at the bottom of the schematic there. I would say it's still a work in progress when you think about the number of countries involved, 15 countries, but almost as many, and a growing number of private companies are involved as well, and two international organizations. But what you see on the map there is you see a lot of white, which means a lot of areas not represented. And so, for example, big wheat-producing regions like the Ukraine, Russia, and so on, it's hard to pull them in as members. You get other Eastern Bloc countries that might have the funding commitment to be a member 1 year, and then the next year they don't. So trying to maintain that critical mass and that membership is always going to be a challenge, and that's where committees like the ICC come in to try and help stabilize that. And if you're interested in getting involved within that governance structure, I'll warn you, the meetings are in really crappy locations. So for example, this one here, as you can see, was a horrible time. Myself and Dr. Curtis Pozniak represent Canada on the research committee. So what does the strategic research agenda look like? Basically, there's four main themes to that: increase wheat yield potential, protect yield, protect the environment through sustainability of wheat production systems, and the fourth one, ensuring supply of high quality, safe products. And there's sort of two other cross-cutting themes. One which makes a lot of sense to me, and it's the whole idea of knowledge transfer, extension, education, and so on. And then there's the whole aspect of enabling technologies. Where does that fit? Because to some degree, although it involves a lot of upstream work, there are also downstream applications of enabling technologies as well. And so I think that was the rationale to have that as more of as a cross-cutting theme. So you have six in total representing this agenda. And again, to execute on that agenda, working groups are needed. And agronomy was lagging a little bit behind because I think there was this big rush to develop a lot of these expert working groups. And what the governance, those three governance bodies realized quite quickly is they really didn't have much representation on the agronomy side. And so what happens when you show up to represent Canada at the research committee meeting as an agronomist and they find out you're an agronomist, you're soon volunteered to develop an expert working group for agronomy. And that's basically what happened in the fall of 2014. And so this is the start of it. John Kirkcard, he took and he divided up what we have for current expert working groups. And really, we're going to be talking and a lot about the whole genetics, by management, by environment. And you can see the genetics side of it, particularly before agronomy, was probably a little better represented than management. And so here we go. Here's the expert working group for agronomy. I'm the current chair. Dr. John Kirkcard agreed to be the vice chair. And our proposers again, Bill Pan, Sanford Eigenbrode, and Jerry Hatfield. And really, this is sort of a slide I put up quite often when we're talking about to farmers and crop consultants and stakeholders, what should that cropping system look like? And we sat in on a few symposia yesterday about what does that mean and how can you sell sustainability, how can you sell yield potential and the like. And I think in a CEO of a seed company, and you can like it or not, but he really, I believe, hit the point when he said that one second bullet there about farmers grow cash. And I think we'd be remiss to forget that. And so that's why I flashed that up there. It's important. We'll all buy into all those other aspects of it, but it's that profitability scenario. And trying to tie economics around what we do as agronomists, I think, is always a difficult thing. And I think even in the symposium yesterday about economics, I think they at times struggled to deliver and sell that as well. And that would probably explain the tight wheat rotations we see worldwide, and Canada's no different. Wheat canola is a very popular rotation. So G by E by M isn't all that well known in Canada yet, and for years I've been using this schematic because I've been trying to sell the point to a lot of stakeholders and farmers that your variety isn't the golden ticket to yield realization on your farm. There's a lot of aspects that go into the agronomy, which would be the management aspect. And the reason M is a better representation for agronomy is all the different disciplines that would go into that. And really what this slide does is it underscores the need for a working group like ours to be very cross-disciplinary in nature. And why do we need to do that? Because, and Jerry I'm sure is going to really drive home that point, is the yield gap globally just varies dramatically, anywhere from probably 50% to 75% is probably capturing most of the yield gap. And so there's a lot of opportunity and missed opportunities that are possibly exploited, even if we didn't raise genetic potential. Okay, so where do we fit within that strategic research agenda that I talked about earlier? We're in subtopic 3.2, agronomy and integrated crop management, and basically it's all about exploiting the most recent genetics with the proper management, and hopefully that leads to improved and stabilized wheat yields, basically, in a nutshell. And these were some of the deliverables and outputs that we initially established for our expert working group. And we're currently probably at 3 there, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in quite a bit more detail later this afternoon at the business meeting. But we've done a pretty decent job of working our way through some of these deliverables. But the reason I outlined 3 is that's going to be really the tough one to try and execute on is, we can all list our inventories, but then what do we do with that information? What do we do with this expert working group to actually make it something other than just an exchange of ideas? Because I can tell you, the Weed Initiative is looking for more than just that. They want us making a difference in something tangible that we can take to them and say, this is what we've accomplished. And again, who should join? If there's anybody in the audience today that's not a member, I would definitely recommend that you come forward propose and fill out one of the simple little member applicant forms that we have to join this group if you think that what you do would fit and you would be able to deliver upon that. And really, where would you stop as far as cross-discipline? It could go as far as including social scientists, policy analysts, and I believe strongly in stakeholders and knowledge transfer as well. So that's clear where we are. One of the present issues we were asked to talk about when it comes to the Weed Initiative at the latest Jamboree that was held last fall in Frankfurt, and an issue I think for us is you can recruit a lot of people, but how do you build and retain that critical mass? And I think that's where we're at right now is trying to maintain that critical mass so that we can start moving forward with some of the higher goals that we have for the expert working group. And so some of the things that we did, we got rolling with our call for experts in 2016. As Jerry pointed out, we had an inaugural meeting last year, there we were able to put together an executive, not just for the expert working group, but I thought it was really important, and it was thanks to Jerry that we got a community established within the ASA as well, because that sort of gives us a chance to have sort of a cost-effective meeting at a venue where a lot of us are going to be attending anyway on an annual basis. That doesn't help our counterparts in Australia so much, but there's probably opportunity also to have meetings elsewhere as well. And so that's something we'll be talking about this afternoon as well. We did have a goal of by April 15th to have the inventories compiled. We were a little slow, some of us, getting that together, it's almost complete, and the goal there would be to probably bring somebody in to synthesize that information, and that's where we would then utilize that information as sort of our intelligence to develop and identify those research gaps that would provide opportunities for future collaborations and maybe even the establishment of parallel objectives leading to, who knows, maybe some programs in the future. And I think Jerry will touch on that as well, but after the inventory, I think one of the parallel goals that we had was just trying to understand the yield gap. And that's not to say that the expert working group is going to be responsible and take ownership of that. It's something viewed as an important step in understanding what we need to target as well. And that's really been embraced by the Weed Initiative as well. So moving out 5 to 10 years, where are we going to be at with challenges? To me, I think that's twofold. One is moving from that silo research that we sometimes find ourselves in, into a better integration of both the genetics and the management, and then taking that sort of philosophy from a regional scale to a national scale, and finally seeing that executed at a global level. And that's where we could possibly see the evolution of expert working groups into associated programs. And this is something John Kirkgaard put together that's, to me, just classic. And it's so classic that it's not classic. It's even still modern, because I was at a meeting in Ottawa a month ago, and there was a genomics person there, and she was like, I don't understand this G by E by M thing. I don't know what you guys are talking about there. The M is the E. And so that's sort of the philosophy we're trying, and the mythology we're trying to break down. And that, to me, is a good representation of what John calls the bad old days. And this is really what we need to get to. Break down the mythology and create that better way that he so nicely and artfully presented in this slide. And then we all have a lot of examples of that. I see James is doing something quite similar in Australia. And one of the things that we're working on in Canada, I do a lot of work on winter wheat agronomy. But there's opportunity as well on the spring wheat system side. And in this case, we're working with plant breeders to see if cold-tolerant spring wheat lines, which are basically winter wheat lines with the vernalization response knocked out, how do those interact if we start going with really early, aggressive, ultra-early planting dates that aren't really related to a date, but use soil temperature as a trigger point to get out there and start planting? And the whole management system around that, how does the complexity of that change potentially? And our starting point is sowing density and seeding depth, but we're also looking at things like herbicide, residue carryovers, fertilizer management, and the like. And so what is the research committee of the Weed Initiative? What do those folks expect of us as an expert working group? These are some of the expectations that they're looking for us to establish our top priorities for research, be able to realistically put together a plan, and that involves awareness and alignment back to that strategic research agenda, and then start identifying funding at national and international levels, because there's not going to be any money at the table from the Weed Initiative other than to facilitate meetings and the like. And then maybe that's going to lead to a coordination of national calls. Right now we're not really synchronous in how we're doing that. I know Australia has a similar funding model to us in Canada, but they're about a year ahead. And so we've missed out on an opportunity there largely unless a new call comes out that we can coordinate. But in the future, that's sort of where we'd like to see ourselves. And this is just the final slide. I think, and this, there's a lot of people in the room that represent this slide about, I think we have the right people in place, and there's a great opportunity currently to develop those networks. And it's just all about getting the key personnel, because there's a real desire regionally, nationally, and globally to put these 3P, 4P partnerships together and get this moving in a bigger, broader scale than we're currently used to. So thanks for your attention.